with the utmost respect and appreciation. If you're unsure from whose territory you may be listening to my voice from, I recommend nativeland.ca. That's native-land.ca. Take some time to reflect on your relationship and your responsibilities that you deem yourself to have in relation to the lands that you are held by. You're tuned into CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded lands of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh peoples. Welcome to the Unceded Airwaves, hosted by the Indigenous Collective. Today, I'm joined by the artist Brianna Days, a Two-Spirit Dene artist in Vancouver, BC. She was previously mentioned on the most recent episode that featured Faith, talking about Indigenous beadwork. Today, we'll be talking about Brianna and her experiences with beadwork and connecting with culture, community, and reciprocity. Throughout this episode, I referenced Brianna Days' website, which can be found at briannadays.com, spelled BRIANNADEIS.com. Take a peek and enjoy this episode.
You know what I could go for right now? Authentic flour tortillas pan-fried until golden brown.
Yum!
Or vegan taco kits filled with traditional Mexican chilies and spices.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Or how about vegan potato and chorizo taquitos?
How can I get these foods immediately?
Buy Lita's Mexican Foods.
Sounds delicious. Tell me more.
Lita's Mexican Foods is a female-managed, plant-based Mexican food innovator in BC. Their products come prepackaged and frozen at tons of local grocery stores around Metro Vancouver. Not to mention they can be cooked in under 10 minutes.
Wow, that sounds perfect for me. I've been so busy lately and dinner takes so long to make. Where can I get my hands on some Lita's Mexican Foods?
Lots of places. Whole Foods, Choices, Stong's, Vegan Supply, Donald's, and even UBC Bookstore. Hey, where are you going?
To buy some Lita's Mexican Foods. See you later.
See ya.
I was a puny dookie. Nietzsche, Nietzsche, looky, looky, how I get low when I boogie. Don't mind me some goody goodies. I'm Nate and Bougie. My wifey be the wolf, and I'm the wolf that's from the sea. And she no Pocahontas, more like Buffy St. Marie. Come do your dance with me. I dip, you dip, we dip. No, it ain't blasphemy. I sip, you sip, we sip with Nisi Cut. I stand and rock with all my suit without the wooses. Me and bro came out the womb. Nietzsche 1 and Nietzsche 2. We very indigenous people. We some VIPs, I'm a blood thicker than Ulrich and Grease. Nietzsche, please sing your song, this my jam. Got my fam all going ham for the land, not the gram. Statement A is who I am. We choose copper over gold. Praise the elders, I remember what I'm told. Never turn your back on home. We them bougie natives. I got turquoise on my red. We them bougie natives. Five rings up on my fist. We them bougie natives. Big hat with the brim. We them bougie natives. Got that custom made bling. Natives. New city, new sweet grass, new sage. We them bougie natives. Put my knowledge in my brain. We them bougie natives. New city, new sweet grass, new sage. We them bougie natives. You can holler at my name.
Hey a ho.
Hey a ho.
Can't you tell them woke?
Whoa.
The smoke shop is closed. Can you tell your boys dope? Man, I'm spinning like I made it and I'm smudging cause I'm broke again. Always running late. I hope the liquor store is open. I got carvers, weavers, beaters, and designers on my team. I got braiders, hella famous, that I'm signing to my team. In my limousine, don't I look steezy? Next to my digi queen.
Yeah, that's my Moose McGee.
I know ballers, I know chiefs, I know riders from the east. I know educated natives down to picket in the streets. Middle fingers to police, fuck you, we come in peace. I know red skin hippies that be giving me the creeps. I know beauty, I know beach, I know savages and freaks, and I know.
no, no, ain't elite. Bougie native, yes indeed. Art exhibit to the club, and we roll it 20 deep. Copper on my neck, gold on my ring, feather on my hat, skin stitch chin. 100 warriors on my back, daily drumming when I sing. Man, there ain't no way around it. I'm a
bougie native.
I got turquoise on my wrist.
We them bougie natives.
Five rings up on my fist.
We them bougie natives.
Big hat with the brim.
We them bougie natives.
Got that custom made bling.
We them bougie natives.
New city, new sweet grass, new sage.
We them bougie natives.
My knowledge in my brain.
We them bougie natives.
New city, new sweet grass, new sage.
We them bougie natives.
You can holler at my name.
Hey, why are you so sad today?
My succulent died.
Can you even kill those things?
It's okay, there's a Dead Succulent Haunt episode every Thursday at 5 p.m. here on CITR to help your plants grow and to help you mourn those you've lost.
Come on, let's go start some cuttings and listen to Dead Succulent Haunt with Everly on CITR 101.9.
Hi, welcome to CITR. You're listening to Unseen Airways, broadcasted on 101.9 FM. We are hosted and broadcasted from the traditional, ancestral, and unseen lands of the Hunkamean-speaking Musqueam peoples. Today, I am joined by Brianna Days, and we are going to be talking about her role in Indigenous artistry and her activity on social media. Hi, Brianna. Would you like to introduce yourself, your name, pronouns, and anything else that feels right to our listeners?
Yeah. Hi there. My name is Brianna. I go by she, her pronouns. And I am a Olchaco Dene artist from Vancouver, BC. I live in Burnaby, the unceded territory of the Tsleil-Waututh people. And I grew up in Sechelt, the unceded land of the Sechla people. Very small town just outside of Vancouver. But if you're from the area, maybe you've heard of it. And I do beadwork. I also like to paint. I make Barbie dolls, which is kind of a fun little new project of mine, and anything else. Like, I've always been creative since birth, so I've always been an artist, and right now it's been beads for the last couple of years, and I think it's going to be for many years to come.
That's awesome. Yeah. How did you get into beadwork? Was there like a preamble of a different kind of art form that you went into before getting onto bead?
So I've painted my whole life and drew, and one thing I found was there wasn't a lot of inspiration when it came to Dene artists, especially being a reconnecting native as well. My mom was part of the 60s scoop, so I didn't grow up with a lot of my culture around me. We grew up in Sechelt with a different native community nearby, and so I never really got in touch with my own traditions. So when it came to art, I was like, I want to find something, give me something. And I couldn't find a lot of Dene painters, but that's because a lot of our people would do beadwork more so as an art form. And my mom suggested, she's like, oh, you should, you know, try beading something. Like, I think she wanted some free jewelry. And she pushed me to this group, Bead This In Your Style, that was on Facebook. I don't know if anyone's heard of it. I think they've shut down temporarily just because it's a lot of work to keep up with all the social media and everything. But they would post a pattern every week or every month, submitted by someone different, something that's kind of neutral, not anything traditional or something like that, because it's open for everyone, but it's primarily Indigenous people that participate. And then everyone does it in their own colors, their own style. They'll maybe mix in different mediums, like tufting and things like that. And it was really cool. So I beaded myself a couple things and I started posting them online. I got good feedback, and that's kind of just how I got started. And I got help because I didn't have anyone to teach me either, right? Living in Vancouver, living near coastal nations who don't really bead that much, they do more like carving, cedar weaving, things like that. There's not really anyone to teach me, so I had to figure it out on my own. So a lot of the way that I learned was posting something and then having people give me feedback and say, oh, hey, like if you do this, it'll be easier, or you do that, it'll be easier. And I was like, oh, thank you so much. Like, coming from people who have been doing this for 10, 20 years that I don't have at my disposal, like in my own, like a personal friend group or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. Like, I remember when I first came across your social media, I believe it was on TikTok.
Yeah.
Like, I was definitely in 2020, I was scrolling through, I started getting on the Indigenous side of TikTok. The algorithm blessed me.
Yeah.
Like, I remember seeing your beading videos, and I've also watched you improve over the past 2 years, and it's been so much fun. And even just seeing like the designs that you do, like, I'm really obsessed with like your lemon earrings.
Oh yeah,
so pretty. And even just like your technique of like coloring in behind the beads before you lay down your beads for your color blocking work, I have never thought about that. And I tried it a couple times on my stiffened felt, and it really changes the game.
Yeah, I think I picked that up from someone randomly.
Oh, sick. Yeah,
it, all those little things.
It makes a difference for sure. So, like, did you start, like, posting on Facebook for your close friends, and then did you transition into, like, wider social media?
Well, like, I would do the challenge, which I found through Facebook, because that's where my mom saw it, and then what I ended up doing was taking a couple of the patterns from a couple months, and then some of my own ideas, and I got this purse, and I decided I wanted to cover it with them, like patches, and do a kind of like that Gucci style patchwork purse. Like, it would be like the coolest like native glam ever. I gotta do this. So I put those projects all over it, and I posted a video, and I'm like, oh, hey, like, I'm going to go buy a purse from the thrift store. I'm not going to do this with like an expensive purse. What if it doesn't look good? Who knows? So I decided to make an upcycling video, and it was like, upcycling native edition. Let's make a purse. So I took a purse, took the stuff that was on it off, and then covered it with the patches, and then glued them on and showed the final result. And it just blew up. It got like 100,000 views or something crazy for an account that had like 10 followers and just posted dumb stuff before that.
And people saw it, and they go, this is what I want to be seeing. This is like the content and like the ideas. Like, you're like decolonizing a purse by having all those different aspects of having your beadwork you've been like progressively working on displayed so proudly.
Yeah.
You ever wear it out, like your purse that you
constantly. Yeah, I use it all the time. Yeah, some people like will stare at it and stuff like that, or compliment it. And then it's got some of my first projects on it. So honestly, it's like kind of embarrassing looking at it, because in detail, you see those mess ups you made when you first started, like all the gaps, all that bumpy beadwork. You know, for one of them, I swear I was beading in low light, and there's about 40 spirit beads in there instead of one, like there should be. So I was like, okay. You know,
like, maybe I need some better lighting.
Yeah, that's a good thing to learn, especially for your eyes.
Oh yeah, I bet.
Yeah, doing it all the time, very important, but I learned that one the hard way. And
are you a full-time artist currently?
Yeah.
So did you transition to being a full-time artist over the past couple years, and what was that like?
Yeah, so when I started beading, like you said, it was back in 2020. So I was just finishing up my undergrad, and it was the last semester for the spring. And so I was finishing, and then COVID came, unfortunately. Yeah. And I did this project with my purse over kind of that month that I had off, where school ended, exams ended, and then I ended up getting laid off from my job for a month. So I did that while I was at home. Thank God for the government assistance during that time, or otherwise I would have had to figure something out. And then I went back to work after that. So then I had but because again of the situation financially, small business I was working for too, I only worked like part-time during the early stages of the pandemic, because people weren't shopping. We were making masks mostly, and then putting those into bags, shipping them out to people. So I was working part-time, and then it did slowly pick up. And then beading was kind of at the same time, just starting, it blew up on TikTok. And then I started posting like earrings I made for myself, and people wanted to buy those all of a sudden. So I had this really good transition where I was able to slowly taper off from my job, luckily, just because of the conditions that we were in. And then beading slowly kind of built, and I just got to a point where I was turning people away for orders, and I thought, okay, you know what, I think I can take the dive and try this out. And yeah, I've been going for almost 2 years full time now.
Holy moly.
Yeah,
So like being a full-time artist, do you have a good separation of like your work-life balance? I'm like imagining like your meeting table being like also like your office, but also somewhere in your house.
Yeah. So I would say the work separation is terrible for me. And that's not necessarily a bad thing because I would bead for free if nobody paid me to do it. Mm-hmm. So like when it comes to what I want to do in my spare time is I'll probably make myself a pair of earrings if I have like a special event coming up and I want something new. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, I'll make something for my friends for Christmas or for gifts, or I just have an idea that I have to make. And that's kind of what I'll do with my spare time a lot of the time as well. But yeah, when it comes to like the home space, we have a spare room, which I'm in, which I've blurred the mess because it's bad, luckily for our call. And then I often work in the living room, like when my partner has the day off and we're both home, I'll work in the living room so we can kind of hang out. Mm-hmm. And then slowly the stuff creeps out there. Slowly it takes over our spare room. And yeah, it's kind of engulfed the whole house. But that's okay. I don't mind it.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. There's worse things it could be.
Yeah, exactly. And I even hang them all over my walls, like all of the beadwork. So like my one wall in my studio is like, it's just covered in art, but it's earrings.
That's awesome. I can't even imagine. That must be so pretty to look at. Like, I'm assuming you do a lot of fringe, but you also do a lot of like beading onto things, right? Like you bead onto a flat surface and that's your earring. Are all of them studs or most of them on hooks?
Most of them are on hooks just because like they're my personal preference for wearing. Mm. So that's kind of what I do for a lot of my work is typically just do what I think looks nice. And people tend to agree, which is good. I have at least a moderate level of taste that people are okay with, which is good. So yeah, that's kind of what I do is mostly, flat stitch, I think you're thinking to call it, where people are doing single needle or two needle, which are two methods to then sewing down on either like hide or felt or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever really work with like traditional material or not traditional, but more, like natural materials such as like hide or like quills or moose hair tufts?
Yeah, I have a couple times. I did a couple tufting projects when I got some caribou fur to try it out. And then I've done, I think, just one with some quills as well. I have a bunch of dyed quills, but they're, you know, when you get something like so special and precious and you're like, I don't want to use it. It's too special. So that's the hard part. So I've made one project with my quills, but I hope to do more. And then my mom recently bought me this massive bag of leather scraps.
Ooh.
That she got on Facebook from someone as leftover ones, and I'm so excited. It's so nice and it's easy for me to bead through because honestly I beaded so much that I got tendonitis last year.
Oh no.
So when it comes to hide, I often struggle because you have to like pull it through with pliers and stuff a lot of the time. It's hard to work with, but she got me some really nice stuff that's like actually thin and easy to puncture, and I'm excited to use it. So I've been using a little bit of that, and she got me some pretty like colorful ones as well. And I'm like, ooh, same thing. I'm having a problem with how do I use this? I don't want to waste it. It has to go to something perfect. So I put a little bit too much pressure on myself, but I think a lot of artists are used to that.
Yeah. I feel like also it's quite exciting when you have those items like quills or like hide that you're not quite wanting to use until it feels right.
Yeah.
They almost speak to you and they tell you what they want you to make out of them. Like when you sit with it for long enough, you're like, this would make a really good pair of like earrings that would look like this, or this would make a lot of sense to use this way. I feel like sometimes like the material comes to you with intention, even if you don't know it yet. And that's when you have that feeling of like, I don't want to touch it yet until I know what to do with this.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like inspiration will come sometimes too. Like I follow like every beader I find online, so like both my Instagram and my TikTok, I follow like 5,000 people or something crazy. So like there can be that too where I'm like, oh genius, you can use them like this. You can use your like, for instance, you could use your quills as a part of your fringe, like a really long bugle bead.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh genius, that's a good idea. Like just things like that, that like the possibilities are endless and people are so creative that like just seeing what everybody else does, it lights a flame inside yourself to do the same.
The creative natives on the social media, I find social media is such a prime space for Indigenous creators because you can see it, you can listen to the creator themselves, they can teach you techniques, but it's also like not only can you see one person's creation, but you're also interacting with the audience because you are the audience.
Yeah,
it's nice when it's like, you know, you're an indigenous space on the internet, especially like on TikTok. You can tell when like the majority of people liking, commenting are indigenous, or at least like the best allies, and like they have solidarity and things like that. But you're you can feel the difference in atmosphere in like the comment section alone.
Oh yeah, because comment sections can definitely go one way on the internet. So seeing like I don't know, the Native community is just so positive and uplifting to everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
So it's amazing. Like I've been doing lots of TikTok lives, which are fun, and getting to like really interact with people who are like, oh my god, I followed you forever, and like, oh, I learned this from you or that from you. It's so rewarding to hear. And mm-hmm. then just getting to talk to people and do that instant feedback too when it comes to doing tutorials and stuff. It's really fun to do them live and actually get to talk to people.
People can ask questions and things. That must be really helpful.
yeah, exactly. Because like a Zoom would be hard to organize with 300 people. But, you know, you just go live on TikTok and then they can make their way in when they want to and leave when they want to, and you can help everybody out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's quite interesting. You started beading and like getting really into it during COVID, like, you know, lockdown, isolation, stay home. Did you ever really access any like beading circles, whether that be in person or online?
Not really. It was mostly like that kind of more community than like a beading circle of like the bead this in your style.
Okay.
And then just in general, the Native TikTok community, because that niche is like, it's so carved out. Like we just have such a big presence there, and it's kind of like its own little awesome bubble that you get to live in, that, you know, just that even was kind of a community that felt like a beading circle. Just everybody was on their own time zone, and we're all kind of showing each other our projects, you know, through the videos.
Mm-hmm. And before we got on the call today, I was looking at your website, and I saw that under some of your products, you not only sell finished completed beading, but you also have like beading kits and like clay centers for earrings. What were your ideas behind having like beading kits on your site?
Yeah, well, the centers got started because I saw people were selling clay cutters, like little, basically little cookie cutters that you use for crafting. And there was this really beautiful one of this like woman's body.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, that's cool. I want that. Like, wouldn't that be cool to bead around that? That would be great. So I bought it, made myself some, and everybody was obsessed with them and wanted to buy them. So then I put those out. And then just with that too, people who are learning from my tutorials on TikTok or on YouTube or just seeing my work who are like, I want to do what you're doing. How do I do it? So the bead kits were a good way to provide people with the materials, and then they could follow the tutorials. So the kits I've sold, I've had a corresponding video that goes with them so they can follow along. Yeah. And then those videos are also just up as well for people to watch. I've got tons of those that are really fun, and it's a good way for beginners. It's a great gift. Like, just it's such a fun hobby, and it's so rewarding making your own piece of jewelry, especially from scratch. Like if you go out and buy things and put them together, you're like, this is cool, but like building something out of what is basically nothing is really cool and just so awesome once you finish it.
The whole process from making the first earring, feeling so proud, and then realizing you gotta make the second earring.
Yeah, the existential dread that follows, that you're like, I don't want to do it all over again. Why don't I just have one ear? Like, what if I just wear one? Doesn't that look cool?
And we're all like, yeah, it looks cool.
Yeah, like, yeah, you do you. It'll be a new thing, I'm sure.
Yeah, and even more, I've been following your Decolonial Barbie dolls. Mm-hmm. I have been loving them. So for listeners that aren't aware, Brianna has been making Barbie dolls and has been, I'm not sure what language you want to use. If I almost want to say like revamping, but not quite. Like, you're decolonizing them and giving them a new life. You want to talk a bit about that?
Yeah, I'd say indigenizing works as the verb that doesn't exist, but I love. You could also say with the dolls that they are customizing them is kind of an idea to it too. It's a big industry. Like, a lot of people will take dolls, repaint their faces, or even redo their hair and bodies and stuff like that, and then give them new outfits, paint new faces on. So I've incorporated that on a small scale of remaking their outfits, making them beaded jewelry and little accessories. Like I've even done mukluks with some leather too. And then sometimes I'll do their hair, like I'll braid their hair, obviously. Sometimes they need a little TLC when they come out of the box that requires a bit of love to look better, just because essentially the base doll are like a playline doll, like what you typically buy at the grocery store for under $20. Mm-hmm. So like they're not that crazy on their own. So the outfits especially is where they fall flat. So I love making them these beautiful indigenous outfits.
No, but, I love it. Because even like the tattoos that some of the dolls have, I have such a good laugh, like zooming in on your Instagram post to see what's on their arms, see what's on their collarbones and things. I'm like, yo, that's a tiny little tattoo. That's a little tiny raven.
Yeah. Oh my God. The tattoos are some of the most fun to do. I've been using temporary tattoos and then like nail decals and stickers.
Oh, so that's tiny. How you're doing it. Okay.
Yeah, you got to find tiny ones. So I look for tiny tattoos on like Amazon and then like the little tiny nail stickers and use those. But they're so much fun to do because they're so, like, it's just proportionate. You definitely have to look at the pictures of these dolls to kind of see it. But it is so much fun because Barbie has done a couple tattooed Barbies, like mm-hmm. a handful. And every time it's met with so much, like, controversy and criticism from parents who think it's, like, inappropriate. But it's like, don't you want your doll to look like you? What if you had tattoos? And then the doll looks like you now. And, you know, it looks like their parents or their parents' friends. And it just, it's more representative. It's cute. Like, you don't have to put on, like, I don't know, I hate my mother tattoos or something weird. You can just put on cute little flowers like I do on the Barbies.
Right, little butterflies. They're harmless. And also, like, the representation that I see in your dolls is, like, it's so refreshing. Because sometimes I'll scroll through my feed and, like, I remember growing up as a little, like, Dene kid in, like, I don't know, Toys R Us or Walmart. None of the dolls ever looked like me, and I was aware of it, but like I never really had to think about it. But getting older and being a teenager, looking at beauty standards and like internal self-image, I'm like, yeah, there might have been a difference had there been more dolls that looked like me or my mom or like even like people around me, like my aunts and uncles. Maybe I'd be more comfortable in my skin like when I was growing up into adulthood. But like I'm like so like excited to see people like you creating dolls and revamping them individually and being like, we've always been here. We deserve to have dolls that look like us, and our dolls deserve to look badass.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they're so much fun. And honestly, like seeing people like our age or parents look at the dolls and think back to when they were kids and like being able to finally see that doll that looks like them, mm-hmm. the way they light up is just like nothing else. Like the great thing is that kids these days are used to representation a lot more than I think we are. And so for them, it's normal. They see the Barbies and they're like, yeah, they're cool Barbies. What you talking about? And to us, there's so much more than that. So it's really cute seeing it in adults. And yeah, for diversity, I've done so many things. We've done the tattoos, obviously. I've done a variety of skin tones. So I have them all the way from super pale, like myself, to quite dark, people with vitiligo as well, which is a skin condition that takes the melanin out of your skin, so it can create splotchiness on the skin if mm-hmm. Anyone's not familiar. But it's actually really beautiful, especially on the dolls. I think it's very, very cute. And then I've done some for disability awareness with wheelchair users, one with hearing aids, one with a prosthetic leg. And then lots of like two-spirit dolls too, who could be any gender that you want to assign to them. Some of them have traditionally male, air quotations, bodies. But and then I've put skirts on them and then done a lot that have like shorter hair, or colored hair is a good one too, because mm-hmm. not all natives have black hair and brown skin. We sometimes look a little bit different than that. Especially if they're a raven. Like, you're gonna tell me that a raven today wouldn't dye their hair pink? Like, that's completely on brand, in my opinion.
I agree.
Right? You know, if you're doing it back in the day with some berries the best you could, I bet today you see what they have in the store and you're like, hell yeah, let's do it. Right? So the dolls are supposed to be representative of everyone. So when I shop for them, I tend to be a little bit pickier with picking. And I try to pick the ones that look the most diverse and interesting, as opposed to the standard Barbie, which I will buy once in a while because there are still people who are blonde hair, blue eyed and native that need to be represented as well. But I think definitely I lean towards getting the curvier dolls, because I know for me that was the biggest thing as a white passing native. The dolls, you know, look like me, but at the same time they were skinny as hell. And I was not looking at them and feeling good about my body either. So I love those dolls. And then again, getting dolls with like different hair textures, or trying to find ones with dark colored hair, with deeper skin, with medium skin, and really trying to represent all those people that didn't get represented.
So after you make your dolls, I know they get posted on Instagram, and I believe they are they for sale on your website?
Yeah.
So do you sell them off, and how do you determine where they go? Like, do you have a preference for Indigenous or non-Indigenous folks purchasing your dolls?
I mean, I'd prefer if they're Indigenous, just like in the theoretical sense of like, I'd really hope that they go to someone that like it warms their heart to see the doll, which could be anyone, but I know it's going to especially hit home with Indigenous people. But at the same time, I've had some people, like one of my old professors from university, buy one for her daughter. And I was like, you know what, that's still awesome, because I'm glad that her daughter is growing up and seeing like ribbon skirts and that being normalized for her. And then seeing also a Native doll that wasn't necessarily like stereotypical Native looking. She bought one that had deeper skin and an Afro, for instance. A lot of people lack representation in their communities. And because of that, if we bring it a little bit in, it can be really positive for those people that's it's not even representing, right? Like, little kids, like I said, are used to seeing that representation, and it's great. They get all these amazing shows and the product is better, right? Versus ones that are, you know, more preferential or to certain people, or ones that are completely misrepresentative or appropriative of Native culture, for instance. So I think that representation isn't just for those people that it represents even, it's good for everybody. So there's no reason not to do it. So I'm happy with anyone if they want to support a Native artist and a Native concept and dolls. You know, every time I get paid for a doll, I go and buy more because I love making them so much.
How many do you know, made now? Total number of
over 40.
Oh my Lord.
Yeah. Or over 40, at least 30 like completely unique ones. And then some of them I've made a couple times. Or I've done like the same base doll but with a new outfit.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so neat. And when you make the outfits, are you like using a sewing machine, or are you doing it all by hand?
Yeah, so I figured out a way on my sewing machine to sew the dresses in an efficient way, which is good.
They're tiny, right? And then, the doll's not that big. They're like your palm.
No, they're little. So it's like a 8x8 piece of fabric, and then with a couple ribbons on it, like 3 to 5 ribbons. And then, yeah, you just stitched up. They take, you know, like 20 minutes, I think, for me to make one of those little dresses. Yeah. So they're not too bad. They're much faster than a human garment, that's for sure.
Did you learn how to make like life-size person garments before you made mini doll-size garments?
Yeah. So actually, a part of my education, I also went to school for fashion marketing for a diploma for my first 2 years, and then transitioned into the undergrad for business. So I was secretly training myself for this job that I didn't know I was going to have. And here we are today, which is awesome. But yeah, so I worked in fashion for quite a long time. I interned for a few different stores during my program, and then I ended up working for one of them, a local designer, Shelly Klassen, for quite a long time. And there, because everything was made in Vancouver, I was able to learn a lot about the design process, and I got to help with sewing once in a while and things like that. So I already knew how to make garments for people. And then I just had to figure out how to make them teeny tiny, because honestly, it is not the exact same. It requires also lots of figuring out and playing, trial and error, all that.
So, do you ever feel like you're like playing with the dolls when you're indigenizing them?
Oh yeah, definitely. Like dressing them up, I'm like, oh, you're so pretty.
The
It's great.
dolls
Like,
ever hang out and like go go to the powwow together?
almost, not quite, but like for photo shoots, honestly, it's like setting up like a human photo shoot. Setting up the dolls, I very much feel like I'm hanging out with them and we're taking cute photos. Also, when I did one of the markets I did in the summer, I met another artist who makes puppets. Really cool puppets, often out of wood or like salmon skin and stuff. Really cool. And yeah, he was like, we got to do a fashion show with the dolls. I was like, yeah, let's do it. And it's awesome because I love that even men like light up when they see the dolls and get excited about it. Like people who don't usually play with dolls will see them and be stoked, which is, I think, the sweetest thing too.
It's like they're recognizable. You look at it and you can tell. You're like, that's an indigenous doll right there. Like,
Yeah.
I've never seen one of them on a shelf before. That's interesting. It really catches your
Yeah.
attention. It's almost the same way I feel like walking down like Granville Street or something in Vancouver and seeing another indigenous person and like the double take of being like, I know, I see you. I see you. Did anybody be wearing
Yeah, just
anything?
like
Like,
the kind of approving nod. You're like, hello.
exactly. And they go, what up? And you're like,
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, oh my God.
it's such a like, it's super exciting because I didn't grow up here in Vancouver. I grew up in the Northwest Territories. So like small town, very much like a lot of folks were indigenous or of mixed ancestry. And so it wasn't very uncommon to have a lot of indigenous influence in my upbringing. But whenever I would leave the north and go down to the cities, you wouldn't see any other native people. And it'd be very
Yeah.
disheartening because I'd be like, wow, I don't feel like I belong in the city. I feel like I only belong in a small town. But then coming to Vancouver and like realizing, oh, like there's a really wide community here. Even getting in touch with like Anya over down in East Hastings, the Urban Native Youth Association, or like the Friendship Center, I was like, oh, there's so much more going on that like there's other urban native people here that are like navigating this space and making it their own. What a relief, because I don't feel so lonely.
Yeah, exactly. It's so true. It's kind of like a secret club where you kind of got to find like the community yourself and do, research and see and show up to events. And Anya is an amazing resource. I have done a bunch of beading workshops there too, over the spring and summer, and it's really awesome. All the people that work there are lovely, and it's so cool getting to meet people from all different Indigenous backgrounds, coming together and, into a place where it doesn't feel like where we belong. It's really cool. It's brings everyone together.
I totally agree. And like coming together, I find is so important, especially now, like the conversation we have is like pan-indigeneity is kind of lumped together in one big cluster. It was like, oh, you're indigenous, so like you probably fit all these stereotypes, or you practice these certain like traditional practices that I'm assuming every indigenous person does. But every person's different, every nation is different, everyone's family cultural practices are different. That coming together and sharing and seeing like the overlap between you and another person, it's like, wow, we really do have connections, but we are not like a big wall of like identity. We are all very like vibrant and different, and like we're expressing it in what feels right to us and making others around us feel more comfortable to express their indigeneity too, and whatever feels right.
Yeah, it's great. Everyone is just yeah, I think everyone seem like is so warm-hearted and lovely that when you're in those spaces, it feels like being at home. It's awesome.
Yeah, and then the last thing I want to talk about for your website that I was kind of perusing was community reciprocity. I saw that a lot of your sales go towards certain, I want to say foundations or other not-for-profit kind of organizations. And I was wondering if there's any of them you want to kind of highlight, like anything that you're quite proud to be contributing to.
Oh yeah, there are lots of them. Let me look at the list because I can never remember. I can always remember like one or two, and then I forget about one that I love. But yeah, so the main thing is when I started the business, because it was kind of an accident, because I was just posting my stuff online and seeing what people thought, and then everybody was in love with it. When I posted my first earrings that I had like 10 sales of, I think, and I was selling them for around $100. And so I made like $1,000 really quickly. And I was like, oh my God, this is crazy. Like, I don't deserve this. This is like, you know, my fourth pair of earrings I've ever made. This is crazy. So I decided to give a decent chunk of it back. And so I donated right away to, I think it was Black Lives Matter Vancouver. And then I think I'm not sure what the other one was, but it was an Indigenous specific cause. But I split it between those two because I just felt like I had to give something back after, you know, everybody gave me this amazing gift of wanting to own a piece of my art, which was something that's only happened to me, you know, so many times, not like not as much as this was. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So for the foundations, the Indian Residential Schools Survivor Society is a good one. There are so many S's in that one. It's a struggle. But I've donated to them probably 4 or more times, I think, just especially with finding the mass graves in the last couple of years and everything. I thought that was one of the most important ones for me to donate to. Besides that, I've done like the Gord Downie Chani Wenjack Fund, which is another similar one for educating about residential schools. Also like to like the food bank, after a fire up in, up north. I don't remember which community. Mm-hmm. And then I've, also donated to things like, more of a mutual aid for like Braided Warriors,
okay,
for instance, who are like a local, group. I don't know, like activists, I would say, we're standing up for Indigenous rights when it comes to land, pipelines, things like that. So I thought that was also important. And then, oh, Moontime Sisters is one I love. They provide period products for people up north facing period poverty. So I love them. I've donated to them as well. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, a bunch more. On my website, I try and switch it up every month and kind of spread it between a lot of different people. And then sometimes when I don't have something specific, like because of current events or anything that comes to mind, then I'll typically donate to one of those ones that I really like Moontime Sisters or the Indian Residential School Survivor Society.
I love that. It's such a beautiful way to like not only reconnect with culture by beading and like connect with people online and creating a wider community, but you're also giving back to your wider community. Even though some of them are centrally Vancouver based, which is like your immediate proximity, but also way up north and across Turtle Island, it's beautiful to see this is the relationship going in so many levels and going back and forth in so many ways. It's not just one-sided in any way. And yeah. I love it.
That was so important to me because it felt so one-sided. It felt like, oh my God, I'm benefiting so much off of my culture, which is my own, but still is other people's as well. That, you know, it felt kind of weird. I was like, I feel like I have to do something for sure to give back because of how much is being given to me. Mm-hmm. Right. So I thought that was important, which is also why I do my tutorials on TikTok and YouTube, is because I had no one to teach me. So I know exactly what it feels like trying to find a stupid YouTube tutorial to teach you what you're trying to do.
Yeah, especially when you find a tutorial, you're like, oh, this is pretty good, but it's not an Indigenous person teaching. You're like, I feel a little weird following this person to a degree. Like, it's still really good knowledge, but you're like, I'm not sure if they did like enough research to know and not be appropriating this practice to be teaching me.
Yeah, or sometimes it's like more Eastern European or Indian beading, which is just a totally different style, I think, mm-hmm. than a lot of like Indigenous beadwork too. Or it's just like stuff where you're like, this isn't exactly what I'm looking for. Like, mm-hmm. you know, trying to find those good tutorials, I was struggling and having to do mostly trial and error. So that's why I made my channel. So then that way I could give back as well that way. And then now I'm finally monetized, so now I get money from that too. Mm-hmm. So again, whenever I'm doing anything, like for instance, I have a tutorial for how to do red dress earrings for missing and murdered Indigenous women. That one I'm going to be donating all the money that it makes, because that one I'm like, I don't think that's fair I make money off of it, because I personally haven't been affected by it. Mm-hmm. If I was, maybe it'd be a different story, but because I'm not, I don't think it's my money to take. So that's going directly to a charity related to MMIW. Once it makes enough money, I think it's got like $5 on it right now, so it's not worth donating yet, but I figure once we hit like 100, then I'll go deposit it somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's absolutely wonderful. I'm quite a fan of your methodology of going about your business, and your transition into it seems so graceful, although I'm assuming there's a lot more like stuff going on in the background, a lot more like reflecting and probably a lot of like sore fingers
from working yes.
way through different, different materials. But I, for one, am a big fan. I absolutely love your social medias. Do you want to drop your social medias for the listeners? Do you want to give a shout out to any of them?
Oh my God, I love everybody. But yeah, my social media is Art by Brianna Dice. So it's just Art By and then my full name, and as soon, or if you just type in my name, you should find me pretty easily that way as well. But I'm under the same name on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, and Twitch as well.
And Twitch. So you're a streamer.
Yeah. I started a Twitch. I streamed a little bit and then I haven't been lately, but, I want to get back into it again, especially over these winter months mm-hmm. when, I'm wanting to do more indoor cozy beating circles with people that way.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where do you get your beating supplies in the city? I think I'm mostly asking for myself, but I'm also, a lot of folks are curious. Like, where do you get stuff in the city?
Yeah. My favorite place is Bedazzle Bead Outlet. Okay. They're in Surrey. Okay. They're combined with like a diamond store, but, they're not native mate owned, but I do know the owner and he's super lovely and they're amazing allies. So I would still recommend supporting them because their beads are great. Especially if you're just looking for something local, because we don't have a lot here. The only other recommendation in the city is Bizou, which mm-hmm. I think is on Granville Island.
Okay.
And they got a boatload of supplies. So I would definitely recommend checking them out too.
Perfect. Thank you. What does Indigenous joy look and feel like to you?
For me, a lot of it is beading with other people. I think it's really great. The couple bead circles I have done are so much fun. Even teaching people virtually on a TikTok live or Twitch or doing the in-person classes. Like every time that I'm beading with other people or like teaching them and helping them, just that gives me that real joy of like learning a skill and passing it on to someone else mm-hmm. and like that idea of knowledge sharing that I find so important. And I love teaching and I love talking, so it works out great for me. So that's kind of I think, and then also I would say seeing the adults that finally got to see representation in my dolls, the way that their smiles light up, I think is pure Indigenous joy as well. That makes me really happy.
Oh, that's beautiful. I love that. Well, Musi Cho, Brianna, it's been wonderful talking to you today. And yeah, have a wonderful rest of your fall winter transition.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been so great talking to you.
Welcome, I'm Nancy Kwakin.
Do, Tamsi. Ituwao, Iswao.
Ahlo, sahla.
I'm at Skype.
Bienvenido.
Una ti.
Jack Tunal, Tai Tai Tan.
You are invited to volunteer for Swissessism Garden. Get away from the rat race. Get back to the land. Heal, reconnect with yourself. Touch grass. Find a quiet place among the plants and find a quiet place inside yourself.
Check us out on Facebook at Indigenous Garden UBC Farm or visit the Swissessism Indigenous Garden located at UBC Farm just off of Ross Road.
Tune in to 101.9 FM Unceded Airwaves at CITR. I am Cleo Skivinski. I was your host today, and I spoke to Brianna Days, a Indigenous artist here in Vancouver. We talked a lot about social media, reconnecting with culture, practicing reciprocity for communities, as well as some amazing artwork. I was particularly fond of the conversation that we had regarding the indigenized Barbie dolls that Brianna has been creating for the past few months now. I highly encourage any listener to check out some of her creations on her website or on some of her social media. She listed it earlier. I will repeat it now. It is Art by Brianna Days. That is Art, Brianna Days. Brianna is spelled with B-R-E-A-N-N-A, and Days is spelled D-E-I-S. Musi Cho for listening. It's been a wonderful time together here today. Unfortunately, if you missed today's episode's live broadcast, don't worry too much. You can most definitely catch us again on Monday afternoon, 4 to 5 p.m., where we'll rebroadcast our episode. As well, if you are interested in listening to it off the air and more so like a podcast, we are available on CITR's website under Unseated Airwaves. You will also find all previous episodes on this website. If you're interested in getting involved in CITR Unseated Airwaves, drop us a line. Hit us up. You know where to find us. I just listed a couple of resources. Or if you'd like to directly get in contact with myself and the Indigenous Collective, you can send me an email at indigenouscollective@citr.ca. That's Indigenous Collective, one word, @citr.ca. And without further ado, I hope you have a wonderful evening, and I hope you are resting and enjoying the weather. Masi Cho, and goodbye. I'll talk to you guys later.
I just thought I'd give you some time. Let me know when it's a good day. Let's just go be out of the way. I have been in my mind a lot. Let go. Give in, fall down. Let go, give in, fall down. Oh,
Slice of Life Art and Gift Shop is Vancouver's choicest destination for one-of-a-kind artist-made prints, posters, screen prints, riso prints, paintings, acrylic paintings, watercolor paintings, ceramic mugs, ceramic plates, ceramic bowls, ceramic pots, lapel pins, hats, toques, crochet bathing suits, jewelry, trinkets, knickknacks, hand-painted signs, curated thrift, and a bunch more stuff that won't fit in this designated block of airtime. Slice of Life Art and Gift Shop, located at 1636 Venables, just off Commercial. Open 11 to 6, 6 days a week.
We lived on Grave Street, deep in Dundas Town. Strolling down Grave Street with a shaky hand. Waiting on Grave Street, it's the latest fashion. Are you listening or just asking?
What is CITR's reputation, being that it's been around for so long?
Well, I mean, it's, you know, it's very active in the community because it's run by community members and UBC students, obviously. Whether you're into radio as a hobby or whether you want to get some real-world experience, it's a great place to go. It's like a very open and creative environment. Everybody that's, you know, working here seems really jazzed about what they're doing at the station. Just lots of really, like, good, like challenging music and spoken word content. It's a great station.
CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Vancouver, British Columbia, on unceded Coast Salish, Musqueam territory. Learn how to get involved at citr.ca.
I think I want a different name for the podcast.
not two boys. But that can be, I've accepted defeat, and that can be the sub header. But I think the main title should be subgenreification.
That's pretty funny. Yeah.
So subgenreification, two boys talking about music. That is the final name of the show.